say hombre, hold another bottle. Look a little closer, cigar in Moscato. An actor in improv coming from Chicago. Alto, make way for Paul Vato.
Bravo, and welcome everybody to another episode of Paul Vato Presents. And today, my very special guest is Jason Seiler, who, judging by your Instagram, Instagram.com/SeilerPants, you make pants.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got mostly made in Wisconsin, yeah.
Wonderful.
Wisconsin, China. It's Seiler Paints.
I think I paint. The wrong guy. I need a pair of pants, and I thought you could hook me up with a pair of pants. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, folks, I'm just kidding, of course.
I'm not the pants guy.
I'm not a pants guy either. Now in the time of Zoom calls and COVID and whatnot, no need to wear pants.
No.
My guest is Jason Seiler, who paints. He's an illustrator. He's an artist. He does caricatures. He's done the cover of Time magazine various times with people like the Pope. And who was your other cover that you did?
I've done Trump and Pelosi and a bunch of other political people, Biden and Kamala. Person of the year. I think I've done about 10 covers for Time.
That is something like that. But amazing. Congratulations. So I thought I'd spend a few minutes talking to Jason about his art, talking to him about his stand-up comedy. And we have a connection in the world of stand-up comedy as well as the Chicago connection. So folks, please give Jason a very warm round of applause. And thank you, Jason, so much for being here.
Thank you. Oh, nothing better than claps and laughter.
That must be so different. The fact that you're getting claps and laughter on stage, sure. That's not, almost sounded bad. But that, you know, when you're painting or drawing, it's such a solitude thing, you know, that you go from one world to the other where you're very solitary and concentrating. Not that you don't in stand-up. But you're not getting that immediate reaction until afterwards. While stand-up, you're getting it right away. You're getting the applause. You're getting the laughs and all that.
And the groans.
Well, a reaction is a reaction.
Yeah, I love it. No, I mean,
have you got any groans for your artwork?
Oh, yeah. I was just about to say, like, I do get reactions pretty quickly when I share work. It's kind of funny because, like, I have done a lot of political type work, but I can't stand politicians. I like the left or the right. They're all lunatics as far as I'm concerned. And I have no problem illustrating for anybody. Cause I don't have like a horse in the race really that I'm like, I don't worship politicians. Let's put it that way. Every once in a while I'll paint a certain politician and you know, I'm trying to take care of my family. It's my job. Like I'm painting to somebody and I will get just like the nastiest messages from people, just so angry that how dare you even work for that publication or draw that person or whatever it is. I've gotten pretty serious. One time I painted the president of Iran. This was years ago. And I got some serious, like nasty messages from people like trying to curse my family and like writing me crazy things like I actually even got a care package in the mail from Iran. This was like 15 years ago. And it freaked me out so much because I was just after I got all these threats. So I gave it to the police and to the FBI in Chicago. I just told my story and they took it and they came and got it. I don't even know what was in it. And then maybe, I don't know, like a month later, I got a call and they told me it was mixed nuts. It was a bag of mixed nuts.
I was thinking that it was maybe going to be like, man, those are some delicious Persian cookies.
Yeah.
Like,
But
sorry, you didn't want but same thing, mixed nuts. Yeah.
But then I found out from someone from Iran that's actually like a gift of love or whatever. Like that's a common thing to be, you know, so it was probably a fan. But it still weirded me out. I was like, okay, I don't know. People are saying death to you and your family. Here's some nuts. Enjoy.
Maybe they thought you had a peanut allergy, so maybe it was.
Yeah. He's American. Send him some gluten. It'll kill him.
Send him some gluten and a shoe. We couldn't throw it at you, but here it is. No, that's, you know, until somebody's paying your mortgage and your rent or your bills, you know, they can't exactly tell you how to do it. But that's the thing. You know, you're not a hypocrite. You're only going like, oh, I'm only drawing Republicans or I'm only drawing Democrats. You're going across the board and all, you know, showcasing your beautiful talents and artwork. So you can't let that, of course, stop you. And it hasn't. So that's wonderful.
It is a little bit tricky because, you know, there's some artists that I know that only will work for the left. And then they criticize me if I do anything for a right-wing publication. But the thing is I don't illustrate something if it's over the line in any way that I don't, you know, otherwise mostly it's just like, whatever. There's a story about this person and I'm just doing a painting of them. Like, chill out. I'm recording history. Okay. This is something that is happening right now. And whether you like it or not, that person exists and I'm recording history with my paint. That's basically, and I'm also taking care of my family and doing what I love. So, you know, chill out.
So agreed. And that is 100%. You're not doing the political commentary.
No.
You're just doing a painting for whatever article that is, be it right, left.
Yeah.
You know, so no, I don't think that, you know, you should ever, of course, need to explain yourself. I know that we're just dialoguing, but no, you can't listen to what other people say. And then, you know, I'm friends with a pretty well-known cartoonist and he's very, you know, left-wing. His name's Lalo Alcaraz. He's an award-winning cartoonist. And I co-hosted the show Poacher Hour of Power with him on KPFK in LA. And as you know, that's very left-wing radio. And he, you know, he'll go at both sides, but he'll really, of course, goes after the right and especially Trump and whatnot. But I think he would appreciate your work because, you know, we also know people on both sides of the aisle. And that's just incredible. You're taking shit from all sides.
And even in comedy, too, like I don't really get into politics too much in comedy because it just divides the room right away. But I like to make fun of myself or kind of make fun of both sides at the same time. You know what I mean? Like making fun of Trump and Biden together. You know what I mean? Like that's more fun to me, like if it's a fun joke. But yeah, it's different with the illustration because it's, you know, a client will call me and tell me like someone they want me to paint. They'll tell me the story. If it's a caricature type editorial illustration where they're like wanting me to draw a situation, if it was something that I didn't agree with, I just wouldn't do it. And I've done that before. I'm like, I don't really want to do that. And that's fine. They'll find someone else. But mostly it's just in the last 3 years or so with the heightened wokeness thing that's been going on where people are seeming to be a little bit more sensitive about things, that caricature, which is what I've been doing since I was like 9, 10 years old, has not been used as much in editorial work. And I've actually been called out a few times now for doing caricature that I'm a bully, that it's mean, and that they're like, how could you do that to people? And it's just like, it's ridiculous. And it's funny because it really, the caricature illustration and comedy, it's always been like very similar to me. The difference is, when I do comedy, people go to the show to see comedy. So I actually feel like I have way more freedom to express myself. And it's like, hey, shut the fuck up. You decided to come to a comedy show. So get over it. But like with the art, you know, it's like you're kind of just putting it out there. And then anybody feels like they can say and they, you know, what they want. And now everyone has access to tell you what they think, you know? So it's a...
Of course. Everyone's got a platform. Now, you're saying that you're being called a bully, or you might be, because you're exaggerating features of people's faces? Because I think that's what caricature is, correct? I mean...
Oh, yeah. There's been people that take it in that way, that, like, it's... I've been called a bully, is what I'm basically, which is kind of crazy, because... It's like they look at what I'm doing as super mean, or that's like insensitive, or racist, or whatever, just as like because of how I draw somebody. And it's like, That's what they look like. Like, it looks more like them than a photo sometimes. A good caricature, you know, it really can capture someone's, you know, essence. But there, I've definitely noticed, you know, in the last few years, this shift in this, like, people are like walking on eggshells about everything. So
sure, of course. Yeah. Yeah, we especially notice it in comedy or satire and whatnot, you know. But I hear you. So keep fighting the good fight. Now, you mentioned you take commissions. Now, if I wanted you to draw either myself or something for a book, that's a project that you would possibly take on, you would consider?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm a freelance artist. So if you have monies, I provide the honeys, you know.
Yeah. Because I was going to offer, you know, I'd love for you to draw me. It'll bring you great exposure. I feel like a lot of people make that offer, like, oh, please, you know, do work for me, and you'll get a good exposure. So sorry, but I can't tell that to my mortgage company or my landlord. Do you charge different rates, say, for individuals versus like corporations? Like, to draw the cover of Time Magazine, do you have a set rate? Is it the same as other artists? And, you know, if this is proprietary knowledge, then by all means, you don't have to share it. But I think people would be very interested to know, what can an artist make? Obviously, you've dedicated, 20 plus years to your craft?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's different how it works. Because basically, from magazine to magazine, the way it works usually is they have like a set amount for cover or spot illustrations, inside the illustrations. And they offer you the job, you either take it or you don't. You know, so that's usually how that works. And a magazine cover can be anywhere from, you know, 1800 to 2800 to 3500. It depends on who it is. And then it varies for different other projects. Like, I recently did background paintings for an upcoming Disney movie, and that was different. That was more of, I got paid every 2 weeks. So I had a set amount where I was paid. And so it's never the same. Like, sometimes I do, sometimes for clients or for private commissions, I'll do a day rate, you know, which is usually I'll charge like $1,000 to $1,200 for a day rate. And so it just depends on what the project is. And also, especially if it's a private commission, I ask for like half up front for something like that. And then, because I'm also taking on, you know, editorial work while I'm doing that, you know, so it really just depends. There's not like a set thing. Yeah. I mean, and it's different also because when I do my editorial work, I work digitally, but when I do private commissions, well, I also work digitally for that as well, but sometimes I'll do oil paintings, gouache or things like that. Those will cost a lot more because they're traditional and they're huge and they take a long time. So that's, you know, again, it's all over the place. So it depends on what it is. Like, if it's an album cover, which I've done a few album covers before, that can be a lot more than like a book cover but in the industry itself, there's not like a set thing, you know?
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing, because I think that we get a lot of listeners that are getting into the arts or enjoy the arts or artists themselves. And I think that's one of the important things is, you know, monetization and can I make a living at this? So thank you for being free with your information and sharing. So much appreciated. And then how did you get into stand-up comedy?
It's kind of crazy, but we kind of have a connection. You mentioned Steve Byrne before, but basically, so I've always wanted to do comedy. Ever since I was a little kid, I know he's not so popular right now, but Bill Cosby was my favorite comedian. When I was a kid, I would watch it over and over and over again. And as I got older, I just, you know, every comedian show I could see, I would watch. Saturday Night Live, anything comedy. And then, of course, I was really into Mad Magazine and that kind of stuff. So it's always been a huge part of my life. And I wasn't really like a class clown. I was definitely a weird, quirky artist guy that loved to make people laugh, and I would be silly with my friends, and I always wanted to get people to laugh. Like it was, I would, you know, whether I was like walking, like I used to sometimes for just for fun, I would walk around my high school like Charlie Chaplin, and I would just do the Chaplin walk for hours. Like I was just weird. I don't know. Like I've always just loved comedy. And then as I got older, I moved to Chicago when I was 18, and I was in a bunch of punk bands and metal, like hardcore bands, really. And so I spent years touring and putting out albums with bands. And then eventually I quit and focused like on my art full time. And the comedy thing was just always there. But basically what ended up happening was like years of doing my art, I decided to do a podcast because I had been listening to a bunch of podcasts. And actually I didn't really listen to a comedian podcast until someone pointed out to me that Mark Maron was talking about, mentioned my name or something on his podcast. And so I checked that out and I realized, oh, he's got like this awesome podcast. I knew his comedy, but I didn't realize the podcast that he had. And so I listened to that. And then I heard that Joe Rogan mentioned me and I didn't know about his podcast. So this is like 6 years ago or 7 years ago. So I just started listening to their podcast all the time. And I decided one day just to start my own because I'm like, man, I like to talk. And I know a lot of artists and musicians and different things. Like it would be kind of fun to do this. So I started doing the podcast. And eventually I had Steve Byrne on because he had put out a documentary about the amazing Jonathan. And I thought it was really good. I was a fan of Steve Byrne's comedy. And so I shared on my my Instagram, I think, I shared the artwork for that post, that documentary. And I said, hey, everyone should watch this. It's really amazing. He wrote me and said, thank you so much. He really appreciates it. And then he sent me another message a little bit later that said, you know, holy shit, I just, you know, went a deep dive on your artwork. He's like, your work's amazing. And he's like, wow. So he's going on about that. And I just thought, oh, this is a cool opportunity. So I asked him right away. I'm like, hey, would you want to do my podcast? And right, he said, yeah, that would be awesome. So basically, ended up having Steve Byrne on the podcast, and then we were talking and talking and talking. We got way into the comedy stuff, and at one point, he basically said, hey man, you're a comedian. you got to do it. You got to try. You got to get out there and do it. And I was like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I don't know where to go. And he's like, you're in Chicago. Like, there's comedy everywhere. But I still didn't know what to do. And like, I have a wife and kids and illustration. And it's like, I don't know. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be performing in Chicago in 6 months at the Chicago Improv. And I want you to do 5 minutes on my show. So it was terrifying, but I was like, I'm not going to say no. You know, so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. So I took it as a challenge. Spent the next 6 months just working and writing and rewriting and throwing away and writing just to try to come up with 5 minutes. And I was like determined, like, this is going to be good. Like, I am not going to go up there at the Chicago Improv and bomb. That's not going to happen. So, but I was terrified. And I didn't go to any mics because I just didn't feel the material was ready. It was not ready. And I'm like trying. So about a week before I was going to do my first set ever, I went to two mics in the city and I only got like 3 minutes. So I didn't really even get to do my whole set, but it went okay. And I felt like, okay, I think I got this. Cause I'm used to talking in front of people, being on stage. So I'm comfortable that way. Cause I've done a lot of public speaking for my art, like workshops, different things like that. So I'm not afraid to get up in front of people with a microphone. So for me, it was all about getting the material down and making sure, you know, so I worked really hard. I looked at it like an essay. Like I had an intro, I had the middle section, and then I had an outro. So it was like a nice tight 5 minutes. And I got to the Chicago Improv and it was so scary. It's like a real club opening for a real comic. And I went out there and I did really, really well. Better than I think what he thought I was going to do. And he came out or behind the stage when I got off stage and he was like, that was not bad. And he And then he basically said, hey, maybe next time don't open with a masturbation joke. So, and then he invited me to come back the next two nights. And so I did. And then last summer, he came to Chicago again and asked me to do three more nights with him. So I did that. And then I'm getting, I guess I would say, a promotion of sorts, because he asked me to host at the Chicago Improv. So it's you know, baby steps, you know. So it's he's a really cool guy. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be doing it, you know.
Wow, buddy, congratulations. He was also very instrumental in my non-existent stand-up comedy career. But about 3 years ago, New Year's Eve, he was opening in Vegas at Backstage Bar and Billiards there on Fremont Street. And he offered me 5 minutes. So I did it, and I apologize for, you know, possibly tanking his show, but he was complimentary. Gary Cannon, not so complimentary, but I guess that's the way he is with everybody. And so you're lucky Gary wasn't there, I'm guessing.
No.
But, you know, it says it all, that he's invited you back. He's quote-unquote promoted you, which I think is great, because hosting, you just get to practice so much more because you're up there so much more. I think hosting is amazing. But yeah, nothing but love for Steve Byrne, who I think is a gentleman and just an inspiration, and is wonderful for the world of comedy to do this to people that maybe wouldn't have done it without his inspiration. So yeah, thank you, Steve Byrne, if you're listening. And I would love to have him on my podcast as well. So maybe soon.
Yeah.
So I just was DMing with him yesterday or texting with him, I think yesterday or day before. So hopefully we can work on a project together. But yeah, he's hilarious. For those of you who don't know Steve Byrne, he's half Korean, half Irish. He had a great show called Sullivan and Sons. He usually works with Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley, who was the You'll Shoot Your Eye Out kid in Christmas Story.
Yeah, yeah.
So just so talented, very funny. Mm-hmm. And you did the Chicago Improv. You started at the top, you know, so I don't know where you go from here.
Well, yeah, it was weird because then I started hitting mics, like, you know, which in Chicago, there's a few clubs that do mics that I go to every week, which is great because, you know, you get to work your way up. And so like one of the clubs I go to, for example, they basically made me, after a year of hitting that mic, it's called CG's in Bolingbrook. The owner gave me a hosting opportunity. And so after the second night, you do two nights. After the second night, you get to add your name to the wall. And then he had me host again. So I've gotten to like start hosting now for bigger comics there. But there's different clubs like that. But mostly, you know, you go from Chicago Improv to, you know, dive bars and wherever, just hitting mics, you know, hitting the mics. But now it's you know, I'm doing a lot more shows. I started producing my own show as well. So that's been really cool because, you know, doing this, I get to meet a lot of comics in Chicago. And so when I produce my own shows, I put the best comics on, and it's always a great show. Like every show I've done so far has sold out, and everyone gets paid. Like I can't tell how many times I've been, hey, you want to do this one, the show? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, it's a paid gig. I'm like, cool. And I get there and they give me a drink ticket. It's like, that's not payment. So like my comics get paid, and it's always fun. We have, you know, I like the show we did last Friday, sold out show, and it was more of a showcase. Every comic did 15 minutes and every comic murdered. It was really fun. It was a really fun night. It was awesome.
Well, if that's the case, I do have a paid gig for you to paint me. It is a paid gig.
Awesome.
I have cigars and a drink, so thank you. I would appreciate it. I'll send over the contracts. What hurts more? What stings more from a troll? Somebody coming after you in comedy or in caricature?
I have upset a few people with the comedy, but ultimately I don't care. Like, they're jokes. Like, get over it. Like, I don't write jokes to hurt people. I write jokes to make people laugh. And if you can't tell that I'm joking, that's your problem. like it's clearly a joke. Like, you know, I do a lot of like misdirection. I do a lot of making you think something terrible, but then maybe last minute I turn somewhere else and it's a little unexpected. Like, so, and it's, and, but I think a lot of it is innocent and funny. I do a lot of impressions. I do a lot of exaggerations with my features and I act things out. And, but that's, I'm not like saying terrible, horrible things. So every once in a while, somebody gets offended. I'm just like, if you are you got offended at that, like, I'm sorry. It's just funny too, because, you know, you go to a lot of mics and you'll hear comics at mics say certain things. They're like, whoa, like that. Like, so I didn't even go close to that, you know? So, but like with the art stuff, I feel like I don't really care either. I was a little bit shocked when I did my Biden cover, Biden and Kamala for Person of the Year cover, because I was very proud of it. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. And it was a huge honor just to paint for Time anyways. But to get my second Person of the Year cover, it's a historical moment for me. It was a really big deal. Not many artists have done Person of the Year twice. So that's like a really an amazing thing. And I remember feeling all emotional because like Time Magazine even wrote me this nice letter, like, congratulations, you got your second Person of the Year cover. Because when they hire you to do it, you don't know if it's going to be used, because they hire several different artists to paint several different people. So just because they hired me to paint Biden and Kamala, that doesn't mean that's going to be the Person of the Year cover. So when they called me to let me know, I was just like, wow, I cannot believe it. And then it's on the news everywhere. And I was so excited and I was so happy and I was so proud. And then all of a sudden, all the hate mail, even from family members, I got some stuff. And I'm like, I just painted the Person of the Year cover for Time Magazine and you are shitting all over me? Like, so that stung a little bit, especially people in family that said things. So that was a bummer. But I mean, at the same time, you know, people are free to have their opinions. I just think that when it comes to politics and stuff, it's like religion. Like, they're so convinced in what they believe that if you mess with that in any way, they don't want to hear it, and they're going to let you know. And, you know, that's why they say don't talk about politics or religion when you're getting a haircut or whatever. I've been doing this long enough that when I do something, there's always going to be some kind of comment, you know. And sometimes I just ignore. Sometimes I'll, like, respond in a funny, sarcastic way to somebody, or sometimes I'll just delete them. If it's a negative, if it's too negative, if someone's being, like, hateful, I just delete it.
Smart, you know? Smart.
Well, I just don't even bother.
You know, that's the risk that we take as content creators. And yeah, you don't necessarily want everyone to like you. You know, I think Sam Kinison might have said that, and I'm sure others have said it as well, that you don't need the world to like you, the whole world to like you. You just need a small percentage to fucking love you.
Yeah.
And other people have said, all you need is 1,000 true fans that'll support you, buy your tickets to your shows, buy your artwork, mm-hmm. promote you. And that's all you need as a content creator, really, to make a living. So anytime that you put yourself out there, you're going to get your detractors. And
oh yeah,
I had a video go viral 15 years ago. It was I photocopied my butt. I fall into a copier, and that, you know, people didn't know that it was a joke. You know, it's so the horrible things that were said, after that, I was like, there's nothing you can say that'll offend me because I've already heard it all, you know. So
yeah,
it's what we sacrifice when we put our art out there.
¿Quién ese hombre holding up the bottle? Look a little closer, cigar in Moscato. An actor in improv coming from Chicago. Outdoor, make way for Paul Vato.